got a diamond cold heart and I got it in spades, with the Walkman fading like an audio slave. It's a self-induced seizure like a kid at a rave, smeared in day glow, pain. And all the popular prophets wanna take me to task. Well, it's just your opinion, so I'd rather not ask. But I got me a cane and I'm spinning it fast as the band plays. Don't read my worried mind, that smoking gun passing through time. I'm yours, you can decide what fate I'll have on the firing line. 'Cause now all I can do is just dance on through.
Listening to Holy Commutes for Monday, April 25th, 2022. I'm Paul Cook. This morning we've got a bit of a different episode for you. We're going to bring you an audio version of the usual written version of the MAW post-tournament recap found on the Drop website. We hope you enjoy. The feature story is the Juggernauts take their fourth tournament in a row but are challenged the entire way at the MAW opening day tournament. The Juggernauts have come away with the tournament title in each of the last four events, which includes a Mid-Atlantic and a National Championship, bookended by two regular season MAW tournament titles. If you look in the dictionary, the literal definition of a Juggernaut is a powerful, unstoppable, overwhelming force. It is a person or concept that cannot be stopped and cannot lose. A team that has won four straight tournaments, including two major titles during that time period, would seem to fit that billing of being an excessive force of nature. A team so dominant that no others can stand a chance. However, that's never really been the case for the Wiffle Ball Juggernauts during their impressive tournament win streak, and certainly was not the case this Saturday at the opening day tournament. Despite their name, despite their immensely talented and loaded roster, the Juggernauts were brought to the brink quite often on Saturday, and just as often, they always seem to find a way to win. The fact that they were tested so much by so many different teams on Saturday at the 6th Annual MAW Opening Day Tournament, instead of just being an overwhelming force, it just, you know, ran through all the rest of these teams. In a lot of ways, that makes their accomplishments at this tournament and their accomplishments over the last year plus even that much more impressive. It also speaks volumes to the level of competition in MAW. At Wiffle Ball, we talk a lot about super teams, a lot about loaded teams that just sort of create an unfair advantage for the rest of the competition. And while, you know, again, while the Juggernauts are certainly a loaded and talented and accomplished team, they're not running over the competition. They didn't on Saturday. They haven't in the past. It's more that they just, you know, they find a way to win time in and time out. Clearly, they have a very impressive roster, but it's a combination of those two factors, that talent and then being able to find a way to win every time against teams that are just as talented as them, that are just as loaded as them, that are just as hungry and in some cases more hungry than them. That really makes their run impressive and really made Saturday all that much more impressive. They didn't have an easy go at it at the 6th Annual Opening Day Tournament. They battled against both top contenders throughout the tournament. They always faced the aces of basically any team they were facing, and they also faced the aces and just really talented teams of MAW's large middle section of teams that we discussed in the Drop's written preview of the opening day tournament. Juggernauts began the tournament with a less experienced opponent, a little bit easier of an opponent at this point in time, the Maryland Horsemen out of the Maryland Chesapeake Wiffle Ball League, who are making their MAW tournament debut and their overall tournament debut. They won that game. Then they went on to face who I imagine is going to be one of their top challengers, one of the top teams in MAW throughout the year, the Ridley Park Magic. This was, I don't think this was a wake-up call for the Juggernauts as much as, you know, I think it kind of went, I think, as a lot of us expected it to. You know, the Magic are a very, very talented team. Noah Silverman, Teddy Drescher, Sean Bing there, and Cam Farrow. A really good foursome, who was very good last year at the United Wiffle Ball National Championship, reaching the quarterfinals, one run away from the semifinals. This is a very good team. And again, you know, to not many people's surprise, if you've been following along, beat the Juggernauts 4-2. Sean Bing near pitched for the Magic. Cam Farrow hit a 3-run home run, and Teddy Drescher hit a home run. Then that sent the Juggernauts to the loser's bracket, where they kind of had to battle some of these mid-tier teams that are really hungry, you know, want to beat the defending national Mid-Atlantic champions and have the talent to do it. And this is where you really saw the competition sort of meet up with the Juggernauts, and the Juggernauts really sort of have to dig deep to get these wins. None of these wins came easy. They beat the Stompers 1-0. Geno Joseph only allowed one hit the entire game. The run scored on a walk and then a double. You know, so that's kind of the margins of victory we're looking at here with these Juggernauts, you know, games in this tournament. That continued the next game. This was the game to get them to the final six. They beat the Goon Squad in extra innings with bases loaded. Colin Prentice pitched a heck of a game. Ray Lutick pitched for the Juggernauts. Juggernauts really had a battle through that. Then when they got over to the final six, went over from the Dallas Town Fields to Shy Wiffle Ball Park, they beat the Yaks 2-0. Both Ryan and Tim McGowraff drove in runs on home runs. They faced Jared Bull in that game, who always pitches that team tough and, you know, is a very, very good pitcher overall. Then they avenged their earlier loss to the Magic, beat them 1-0 with Cam Farrow on the mound. And then they beat Voodoo 2-1, a Tim McGowraff 2-run home run off of Vin Lee, were the deciding runs in that game. You know, so as you can see, it was a very, you know, it was a tough battle for the Juggernauts. Again, you think a team like that, that's the national, the Mid-Atlantic champions, is just going to sort of run through the competition. That did not happen, and that's a testament to the depth and the quality of teams in Mid-Atlantic. And at the same time, it's also a testament to the Juggernauts that they are facing very, very good teams throughout. This is a team that is not feasting off of inferior competition. It's not a team that's playing teams that aren't trying, you know, 100% to win every time. These are teams that are out there wanting to win a tournament, wanting to beat the Juggernauts because of what that means. And the Juggernauts are still finding, and those teams are also very, very, very talented. And the Juggernauts are still finding a way to win, as they showed on Saturday. So while the Juggernauts' deep pitching certainly helped their road, by losing that game, they had to play 7 total games to win the tournament. It's historically been 6 games to win an MAW tournament. A couple of teams got by to the semifinals this time and could have won it in 5 games. So they had a couple extra games, but it really wasn't the story of the tournament. This wasn't a team that could afford to lose a game and then just, you know, because they had so much pitching depth, they overcame it. Brian DiNapoli only pitched 1 game. Red picked up the loss against the Magic and he pitched a lot, but wasn't as effective as he sometimes is. New pickup Ray Lutick pitched a lot, pitched very, very well, but it was really Ryan McGowraff that sort of carried the load down the stretch. Ryan took the ball in big games, as he has throughout his Juggernauts tenure, throughout his wiffle ball career, and particularly over this 4 tournament run. One thing that really stood out to me about the Juggernauts on this tournament was just sort of the trust they have as a team. You know, the core four has played together, now going on their 4th year as a team. And Brian DiNapoli was on the team last year, and Ray is the only addition. But Ray has seemed to fit into this squad really, really well from the get-go. And the best example of that trust that they have in each other and that trust they have as a team came against the Yaks in the quarterfinals, the round of 6. Ray Lutick started that game. The Juggernauts were up. It was the 3rd inning. Ray allowed Ray walked both Skip and Bull to put runners on first and second with nobody out. So in a situation like that, Ray knew their best. Ray and the rest of the teams got together, understood that their best strategy forward at that point was to bring in Ryan, try to shut down this inning, get through it, and then, you know, go from there. So they did just that. Ryan came in, struck out the next three batters using his fastball and changeup combination that has become, you know, a huge weapon for him, and was able to get the juggernauts out of that inning. And once they got out of that inning, they went back to Ray for the rest of the game. And that's just a great example of how this team, you know, sort of trusts each other, sort of, you know, knows everyone's strengths and weaknesses and works through that. You don't often see a reliever come in for a pitcher just to get him out of a jam and then go back to that pitcher. So it's both trust in Ryan to get him out of that jam and then trust in Ray to be able to settle down the next inning after he had trouble starting off that previous inning. So the Juggernauts have now won four titles in a row. And, you know, there's, if you know these guys, they do not intend to stop there. Obviously, they're not going to win everything, but that's their intent. They will lose more than several games this year. They'll lose more than several tournaments this season. That's inevitable. There's just way too many high-quality teams competing regularly in MAW for anything else to happen. There's also a very good chance that they won't even end the year as a top MAW team. That's just how fierce the competition is right now in Mid-Atlantic. But for now, there's no doubt they're the standard bearer. They're the team to beat. They're a team that everyone should want to beat and does want to beat. There are many MAW regulars nipping at their heels and trying to take them down. An interesting question is, you know, is there anyone outside of MAW up to that challenge? Not just to beat the Juggernauts, but also to compete with the rest of the very, very talented MAW field. The Juggernauts are the team to beat right now, and at Saturday's show, they're ready to deal with all the big challenges and challengers that stand in their way. So whatever's next for them, you know they're going to put up a fight. We saw that on opening day, and we should expect that the rest of the season. Now we will empty out the opening day notebook with the here and there section. As expected, pitchers are ahead of hitters at this time of the year. We saw that at the spring training event tournament, and that carried through to the opening day tournament. So that fact resulted in some long extra inning games and low-scoring affairs throughout opening day. The Dallas Town Park group was especially impacted by this, with several games extending deep into extra innings at 0-0. David Wood was a semi-unexpected participant for Voodoo in the opening day tournament. Toast, a Georgia resident, was in a full go until the week of the tournament. He's hopeful of doubling his output from the 2021 MAW regular season, which would mean competing in four events prior to the postseason. The rivalry between Voodoo and the Juggernauts seems to just be starting. The finals between the two teams was so closely contended that even without changing any of the player-pitcher variables, it probably come close to even if you played it out 20 times. This is a really close game, and you really got the feeling that these teams are going to meet up at different times throughout the season in really big, important games. And even when they're not playing, that they're going to, you know, really factor into the outcome of every single tournament. That's just inevitable. Another team that kind of fits that same element is Earl. We expect them to be around all season. They were shorthanded on Saturday with only three players, Captain Connor Young, and then new additions Rob Landreau and Withman. So they got big contributions from those two newcomers. The two-time Mid-Atlantic champions reached the semifinals in large part because of Withman's hitting, and then a big quarterfinals win on the mound from Rob Landreau over the long balls. The Goon Squad's Andrea Sphinx took the ball early in the day on Saturday, fulfilling a goal the Goon Squad established during the offseason, which was to give Fink more innings and try to lessen the pressure on Prentice to throw as much as he did last year. The results were really, really good, especially stuff-wise. Scouting reports were very favorable about Fink's stuff, very good velocity, a good slider that he works off of. He had a long extra inning game, started game two. And so I would expect him to continue that progression, continue getting a lot of innings, and to see that pay off with more wins as the season goes. The Ridley Park number three team was a last-minute fill-in after a team dropped out. And even though they bowed out at 0-3, they had a very eventful tournament and some good positive takeaways for these players that I'm sure we'll see back in MAW this year and at different times. And if not, it was a good prelude to their Ridley Park season, which is coming up shortly. Vinny Albanese looked really good on the carpet, especially early against the Yaks. Andrew Kelly flashed some good stuff pitching. Mike Collins shows the best stuff of any of the guys. He's just got to find a way to hit the strike zone more consistently. And Joey Van Houten had a solid day and made a really, really excellent tag play put out that we'll have up on the all of our social media pretty soon from just right up against the fence, a good 90 feet away, a really, really good throw. One of the better tag throws, you'll see in fast pitch wiffle ball. Several teams were without impactful players on Saturday. Among the notable absences were Mike Stiles, Kenny Rogers, and Johnny Costa, all from Earl, Dennis Donegan of the Long Balls, and Jimmy Cole of the Risers. Blake Hoffman, the 2018 MAW Rookie of the Year, made a strong return after a three-year absence. Even if he didn't have much to show for win-loss-wise due to some, due to lack of offensive production from the Dinos team. Having said that, the Dinos offense did receive positive reports again, even if the results didn't really show that. Both TJ Hannon and Mike Sidoroff had really strong at-bats. I talked to several people that were impressed with, the at-bats. They had solid contact throughout, just some hard-hit balls that found people, in the usual bad luck like that. So just like with Hoffman's performance, there was nothing to show for, which is kind of the Dinos' theme of the day. They finished 1-3, but played much, much better than their record and were really just a victim of some bad breaks and, just the level of competition in MAW. Speaking of tough luck pitching performances, there were a bunch on the day, a bunch of extra inning games or scoreless games until the fifth where a pitcher lost a game that he otherwise pitched really, really well. And to just name a few of those, Bryce Clark versus the Long Balls, Gino Joseph versus the Juggernauts, Colin Prentice versus the Juggernauts, Dave Capobianco versus Voodoo, and Ethan White versus Goon Squad. And Andreas Singh versus Long Balls are just a few of those games where pitchers had a really hard luck loss in an otherwise very, very well-pitched game. Among the new teams at the opening day tournament were the Bunglers. They picked up a win over the Ridley Park number 3 squad to finish the day with a solid 1-2 record in a tournament debut. They also gained experience playing a top team in Earl, and they competed well against Anarchy. And those guys had a lot of fun, played well, and we hope to see them back at some point. Matt Richard pitched very well against a tough Yaks offense, with walks being his downfall. We talked in the preview article for the opening day tournament that this was a test for Richard of Anarchy, who was going to be given the ball basically from the get-go. He took the ball in game 2 after Jim Cortuccio pitched the first game for his team. He pitched very well against the Yaks, lost 2-1, and then kind of fell apart a little bit in this team's third game. But his stuff is very, very evident. He's a high-effort righty. He has a high shoulder tilt on his delivery, and that may make it difficult for him to repeat. And also, since it is such a high effort, it does take a lot out of him. You can tell sometimes he reaches back and he just doesn't throw hard. So that combination of that high effort and just the difficulty in repeating that definitely seemed to affect his command. But when he throws it over, he's very, very tough to square up against. He's got a great combo of deception, velocity, and downward movement. Just has to get a little more mechanically consistent, I believe, in order to take that next step. The Magic's Cam Farrow added another bullet to his resume of being one of MAW and the sport's best players. Cam hit game-winning home runs versus the Dragons, and the Juggernauts and was robbed of another one versus the Long Balls with an insane catch by Zane Johnston. He pitched the Magic's final two games as well, a win over the Long Balls and a tough loss to the Juggernauts. Camp fully expects to get a big hit every time he is up, and you can see that in him. He's one of those players that has the talent to get a big hit every time he comes up, and is disappointing when he doesn't. We saw some visible frustration from him on times on Saturday as a result, but it seems like only a matter of time before he leads to a tournament title. This guy's one of the best players in the sport. If you think of whatever era of wiffle ball sticks out in your mind, if you think of that era and you think of like a really good young 20s player who's got a couple years of experience under their belt, Cam is the equal to, I think, pretty much any guy you could think of in that regard. Just only a matter of time for him, if he stays healthy, to get that to get the recognition that his talent deserves. The Maryland Horsemen, another new team, fell to an 0-3 record in their tournament debut, but as stated in the tournament preview article, there is both the talent and desire there for them to improve greatly. The team has some arms who are steadily gaining more of a feel for wiffle ball pitches, and the hitting will come with reps. Their big challenge is twofold. It's finding or developing a pitcher or two who can command the ball with above average velocity. They've got pitchers that, are right around the zone, that have some movement on their pitches, that are kind of throwing, yard speed, if they can just get a little more velocity, and then, honestly, even before the velocity, get a little more consistency and then sort of work on the velocity, those pitchers can take the next step. If they can find a couple pitchers that in the Maryland Chesapeake League that fit that mold, that could also help them take the next step. But we expect to see these guys back, and again, based on their commitment, based on their desire, expect them to improve significantly, even if it's incrementally, as the season goes along. So Jimmy Cole was never expected to be at opening day. He's reportedly committed to three specific tournaments with the Risers, but you can't help but just wonder how the Risers might have fared in their first game extra inning battle with Voodoo had Cole been in the lineup. The Risers had runners on base throughout the game, sometimes multiple base runners in an inning with zero or one outs, but they couldn't come up with that big hit, something Cole has a rep for delivering. Jeff Lopes showed why he's a important cog in the Voodoo machine on Saturday. He pitched quality early innings for his team, allowing the veteran-leaning squad to keep Robles and Lee fresh until the elimination round, which is really going to be, I think, Lopes' big contribution to Voodoo as the season goes along, eating up innings, and not just eating them up, but giving them quality innings and keeping those arms that are more effective pitching just one game, your Toast, your Robles, and maybe even your Vin Lees, fresh for later on, and his Devin Torres's too. So if opening day was a harbinger of things to come, then the Long Balls' Brendan Bowes is in line to improve on his already award-winning rookie year in his sophomore season. Bowes threw 15 really high-quality innings for the Long Balls and had a game-winning hit versus the Stompers, and has clearly taken his game to another level. And last but not least here in the Here and There notebook is Ryan McGowrath's pitch selection on Saturday. So last year we saw Ryan late in the year go to what's basically like a baseball cut fastball that enables him to get a little more velocity on his pitches. He's now, he's now back to being a hard, in his heyday a few years ago, he was one of, the harder throwers. Arm injuries, like they do for everyone, has maybe taken their toll, but this pitch is a high velocity pitch. It's a really good pitch that you don't see often in wiffle ball, and was very effective in his sort of turnaround late last season that helped the Juggernauts to the Mid-Atlantic title and the national title. At this tournament on opening day, he added another wrinkle. He's thrown a changeup plenty of times before, but here he went very, very heavy changeup. It wasn't 50-50, but it was a lot heavier changeup usage than he showed last year. So basically throwing just like a baseball pitcher, changeup fastball. It was very effective. And one has to wonder, too, if Ryan's already kind of thinking forward of what the third or fourth or fifth iteration of this new style of pitching is going to be for him. Clearly he came into opening day already with the idea of throwing more changeups, or if he didn't, he adjusted on the fly, and it was very, very effective. And chances are a pitcher like him already has in mind what his next step is. Now for the opening day injury report. It's early, but knock on wood, no major injuries have been reported coming out of opening day so far, and hopefully that continues. There are still a few injury notes to mention here. Noah Silverman of the Ridley Park Magic did not pitch on Saturday. He's experiencing shoulder soreness that he's kind of had all offseason. He didn't pitch at spring training day for that same reason. But both Noah and the team state that the move is purely precautionary at this point. It's a long season, and they're just trying to bring him along slow. Likewise, Toast did not pitch for Voodoo on opening day for a similar reason, also shoulder soreness. Have a little less information on that, but my understanding is that's kind of the same thing, just sort of bringing him along slowly, not trying to watch his innings, watch the effort that they put on his shoulder, and try not to put too much on early. The Dragons' Frankie Campanelli, who had off-season surgery on his pitching arm, was in attendance in sporting a Dragons jersey in support of his new team. The former short ball is still 2 to 4 tournaments away, June to July, from being able to swing a bat in the game. But when the Dragons get him, that'll be a big addition to their offense. Ben Stant, off-season labrum surgery, largely coached the Juggernauts during the tournament, but did get in a few one-handed swings during a prelim game. The Juggernauts, speaking of the Juggernauts, another injury note for them. They hoped or planned to restrict Brian DiNapoli to a few innings of work on the mound and then a DH role for the rest of the tournament, trying to keep him out of the field as he's coming off of knee surgery last fall. However, the two-time national champion did, in addition to his few innings of work, he also fielded late in the tournament and seemed to weather it well. There was no visible signs of discomfort, which is good news. Lastly, the most significant and certainly the most bloody injury of the tournament was suffered by Joey Van Houten. JVH suffered a significant laceration on his hand in addition to some blood loss while, of all things, opening a can of beer during his team's third and final game of the tournament. For a quick look at the standings after one tournament, the standings are exactly what the tournament standings were. So the Juggernauts won the tournament and are currently in first place in the point standings, which will be out very, very soon. The more significant aspect of that is opening day tournament was one of three tournaments, along with the July 2nd tournament in Pittsburgh at Highmark Stadium and the July 30th tournament in Staten Island at Staten Island Little League. Opening day in those two tournaments, the winner of those tournaments automatically advances to the Mid-Atlantic Championship in September. So the Juggernauts have locked in a spot, and while they're still expected at every single event this year, in large part because the point standings will still determine the seedings for the championship tournament, and the top two teams in the championship tournament get a bye to the semifinals, very similar to the six-team playoff format from the opening day tournament. But the Juggernauts, at the very least, have that locked in and don't have to worry about missing out on the championship tournament altogether. Voodoo, Magic, and Earl, coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, they were the top, along with the Juggernauts, they were the other three teams in the top four in the Wiffle Statement preseason MAW Power Rankings. They finished 2 through 4th, respectively. So they sit in the next three spots point-wise. They're all off to a great start to make the championship tournament. The two highest cumulative point getters at the end of the MAW regular season after the August 13th Ocean City, Maryland tournament. The top two point getters, aside from the three teams that get the automatic bids, those next two top point getters will go straight through the Mid-Atlantic Championship tournament on September 17th and won't have to play in the MAW Wildcard Tournament on September 3rd. Now to wrap us up, a quick look at what's next on the calendar. MAW returns in just 2 weeks to York on May 7th for Backyard Brawl 5. This will be back at Shy Wiffle Ball Park for the second tournament of the year. And then the other May date, 3 weeks later in Millersville, 3 weeks later, we'll be in Millersville, Maryland for Battle of the Bay at Larry's Tavern, which is home of the Maryland Chesapeake Wiffle Ball League. This is a great tournament. It's Memorial Day weekend. If you're looking for something to do, this is a cool area to go to. It's basically between Baltimore and Annapolis, so lots of tourist stuff to do. It's a Memorial Day weekend off Monday. Very similar for people traveling from any destination north of Millersville or north of York, or even directly east of York. East of York. This is a very similar travel time wise to York. For some people, it may be 30 minutes longer. For some people, it's going to be a little bit less. From the Philadelphia area, it's actually a little less than to York. For others, it's going to be about the same. So we hope teams can check that out as well. So there you go. That's the recap of the 6th annual MAW Opening Day Tournament, won by the Juggernauts with Voodoo finishing second. And that also ends our April 2022 season of Holy Commutes, or our Monday episodes, I should say, of the April 2022 seasons of Holy Commutes. There'll still be new episodes throughout the week. Please listen to those. Tim Dean will be in tomorrow, I'm sure, with another great guest or another great topic. And then we'll be back, I believe, in July, June or July, for the next season of Holy Commutes after this. And so we hope you join us then. And in the meantime, we'll have periodic episodes of the Drop Podcast on the National Wiffle Ball Radio Network. So until next time, thanks for joining us.